Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 27, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, Senator Charles Grassley's proposal to limit farm subsidies to $250,000 per person has yet again been shot down. We'll have these and other stories this half hour, and we'll get the latest on the weekend weather outlook for the corn and soybean belts from Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, May wheat 550 down 10, July 560 and a half down 10 and a quarter. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat 507 and a quarter down 7 and a quarter, July 520 down 7. May corn 387 down 3 and 3 quarters, July 397 and a half down 3 and 3 quarters. September 407 down 3 and a half, December 419 and a quarter down 3 and a half, March 432 down 3 and a half. May beans 917 down 27, July 915 and a quarter down 25 and a quarter. August $9 and 3 quarters down 23 and a quarter. September 871 and 3 quarters down 21 and a quarter. November 860 and 3 quarters down 19 and 3 quarters. January of 2010, 871 and a half down 19. May soybean meal 283.80 down 70, July 279.90 down 610. April soybean oil, make that May soybean oil, 32.42 down 118, July 32.72 down 116. April live cattle 84.32 and a half up 5, April feeders 93.12 and a half down 30, and April lean hogs 60.47 and a half, and they were down 5 on the day. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Are these people in your carpool?
This is David Inge.
I'm Celeste Quinn.
I'm Scott Simon.
I'm Carl Castle from NPR News. Beep, beep, beep,
beep, yeah. Whether you're coming or going, you depend on us to keep you company. We depend on you for financial support to make that possible. Give to our member match fund today, and we'll use your dollars on April 15th to challenge others to help make great programs possible on WILL. Go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455.
Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight, he says, in the north and in central Indiana, mostly cloudy, elsewhere cloudy with occasional showers and patchy drizzle. Lows ranging from 28 in northwestern Illinois to around 50 in the far south. Tomorrow in northern and west central Illinois, cloudy with scattered showers of snow or mixed rain and snow early, changing to all snow. Elsewhere, cloudy with occasional showers and a few thunderstorms. Highs ranging from around 35 in the north to 64 in southeastern Indiana. Extended highlights, a major spring storm will move through the two-state area by Sunday afternoon. Snow in the area west of the Illinois River will interrupt travel and keep the flood situation in the Illinois and Mississippi River valleys from improving. Two more storm systems are expected to track across the region over the next week. While the placement of the heaviest precipitation from the storms is not certain, there is likely to be an expansion of flooding and delays to preparatory field work, and cooler than average temperatures will be the rule for the next full week. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin over on CME livestock side and get the hogs and pigs report out of the way before we tackle the grains. What were the pertinent features there, please?
Pretty much up and down with estimates on all the three major issues, 97% across the scales for all hogs, kept for breeding, kept for market. D's to Feb pig crop was on the high end, Dave, but not tragically high. Probably the most important thing that caught our eye was the farrowing intentions. Some of the traders at the Merck this morning and yesterday on our conference call with them were thinking much, much bigger estimates for March to May and June to August farrowings. 98.5 was the average estimate, came in at 97 and 96. So trade was probably looking and setting their sights on selling some back-end premium in those May, June, and July hogs. This may not work out as well because their numbers are a little bit smaller from USDA than what the trade was expecting. So by and large, a nice report. It's great for hogs from a standpoint of the supply side in case consumption continues to stay weak. It may, you know, drag a little bit on the feed side later in the year for the corn and the meal.
Well, all right, then let's turn our attention to the grains. Let's begin with the soybeans, which came off the island today, filled a little gap that was left over from about a week or so ago. What do you make of the price action?
Well, pretty interesting because we failed at the 50-day moving average in the beans and the November weekly chart. When you look at a November continuation, Dave, it hit its 200-week moving average right on the nose on the close today. That's something very important to watch here as we get into the report numbers on Tuesday. We would not want to see or lose that 200-week moving average after Tuesday's reports came out. I think the other thing that came into play here was we had built some premium early in the week on China's demand and Argentina. The market took that premium out, especially when those technicals didn't hold up. And alongside of that, we had extremely good crush data. But when the crude oil fell today, the bean oil fell off, and the trade kind of lost focus on some of the good fundamentals that came off the weekly export numbers. Argentina also looking at probably ending their strike, but still not out of the woods yet. But the trade felt comfortable taking some risk premium out, I suspect, again, because those technicals didn't hold up and the outside markets were weaker as well.
As you look at the front end May soybean chart and look at it on a monthly basis, we're holding above the 50-month moving average, and we still have a chance for a higher high on the month.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, the nice thing about the weekly and the monthly charts is that we have broken in both corn and beans, broken out of the long-term trend line resistance, the downtrend line. We're you know, not too far away from retesting that in the corn, and we're retesting that, you know, currently in the beans. But you can't throw out the idea that maybe some of this is still the idea by the trade that with the stock market rally, in the lack of follow-through in the grains and the technicals, the trade got pretty disappointed this week as a whole and went and decided to go ahead and check the support levels and take the premium back out of the market until these numbers on Tuesday were released. And I suspect in front-end beans it was more of Argentina and China. China selling some domestic supplies into their own local markets. That was taken out by the trade yesterday and found out by the trade. They continue to price that out today in the market. So next week's report could be a whole new issue. It's like we talked about this morning. The bonds, the S&P, the corn, the beans, the wheat, and the meal, they're all trading right around their 50-day moving averages. Don't think that any real trend was established this week. Probably just more protective mindset and protective trading.
Put a face on that May corn chart for people. The downtrend line you're looking at is the 96 high and the 2007 high, a line through there, which comes right around $4.
Right, exactly. And you know, we held above the 50-day moving average this week in the May corn. I think there were some traders that were disappointed that we didn't get much above the 100-day moving average. But, you know, we did stay above the 100-day moving average as well as we closed out the week. And when you look at the net change on the May corn, down 9.5 cents on the week, you can't really complain too much about that. One of the things that happened in corn today was kind of interesting and maybe explains why they held their premiums was we did see some good export sales, a total of 385,000 tons of corn reported on exports by USDA this morning. That maybe helped keep fresh in the trade's mind that 51 million or 50.8 million bushel weekly export figure from yesterday and kept the corn trading a little bit lighter on its feed and not sagging as much as the beans.
All right, let's go through the scenarios then for next Tuesday. You have a 9 million acre difference in corn, a 6 million acre difference in soybeans. It seems to me that somebody's going to be on the wrong side of this market on Tuesday morning.
Yeah, and, you know, to make us feel a little bit better about that, well, there is one other company out there that's pretty close to us, and they're in the Midwest as well. I think the bottom line, Dave, is we just had to go with the numbers, and we had to go with the Nov bean dees corn ratio at the end of February. And since we did not get a bean-led rally at the end of February, we thought and still think, and our clients that sent surveys back to us said to us essentially pretty bluntly they were still on the fence very, very little, and that they had already made their decisions, especially since there were no fireworks in that bean corn spread the last half of February, and they essentially are going to stick with the rotation, and that would the rotation would suggest that you're going back heavier corn. If you're going to pull beans up as much as to 80 million planted acres, you're probably going to have to rob some from the corn market, and we just don't see that in the corn belt itself. Our survey said overwhelmingly that it just wasn't going to happen. So, yeah, it's going to be one of those reports where we're going to have to move quick on our feet, and hopefully we'll be closer to being right so that we can keep a good beat on the market.
And that quick on the feet thing, I believe, is pretty important. So what would you have hedgers have ready to go to the marketplace on Tuesday morning?
Well, you know, we're at 86.8 on corn, and so that's where the biggest fundamental factor could hit us negatively. If the trade would indeed be more right and we slip below 83 million corn planted acres, then we'd need to pull off some corn hedges. And, you know, since we're in bought puts, in the market, if it would race up, we wouldn't expect to lose too much on those puts. But that's a big reason, along with the weather and getting the actual physical seed in the ground, of why we've split our hedges up so fairly and so equally in puts versus cash sales this early in the year. We are looking at the macroeconomics we talked about this morning still weighing on the market into late spring, early summer. But we realize these micro fundamentals, especially the corn acreage number, could really do some dancing on our heads if the corn acreage number would drop below 83 million acres. So that's why we did the put. So we're ready. I think we're prepared for it.
What else should we be contemplating this weekend?
Well, I think the big thing is these big moving averages. I do have to, when I look back at the trade, and I think many traders in Chicago felt this way, we had the S&P up about 6% on the week, and the corn was down 2.3%. Wheat down 3.6%, or 7.8%, beans down 3.6%. You had a really, really nice lead move in the crude oil up until today, really nice lead move in the outside markets and the equity stocks, but the grains didn't follow through. And you could say that's pre-report jitters until Tuesday, and I think that's what I go home with this week, is that I'll give the market a chance to find support here, both technically and fundamentally. But if we can't turn this ship around after an equity and crude-led rally this week, maybe we've got that 50-day trend intact, and unfortunately it may be to the downside.
Thank you much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a nice weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, the Senate Budget Committee yesterday rejected a proposal by Senator Charles Grassley to limit farm subsidies to $250,000 per person. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad opposed Grassley's amendment, saying he did not want the farm bill reopened. Conrad offered an alternative amendment to cut crop insurance funding, which passed on a 14-10 vote. A crop insurance lobbyist said Conrad's amendment would cover savings that are expected from a renegotiation of the standard reinsurance agreement between the government and the insurance companies. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says a key issue in the Obama administration's proposed overhaul of financial regulators is who will oversee credit default swaps and over-the-counter derivatives. Under a plan presented by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, the government would regulate the market in credit default swaps and OTCs for the first time. Geithner did not specify who the regulator would be, but he did say to the House Financial Services Committee that there should be, quote, a single entity with broad authority over payment and settlement systems. Peterson says he believes the Federal Reserve should not be the regulator. The head of the Illinois Department of Agriculture says it needs to wean itself from reliance on general tax revenues. Farmers and businesses could be forced to make up the difference. Todd Fearer reports.
Agriculture Department Director Tom Jennings says the state's general revenues are no longer a reliable source of funding for the agency.
Everybody's going to have to take a little hit, but that's the way it is, and I'm certain that the kind of entrepreneurial skills of this industry that will be able to fulfill our mission.
Exactly which fees will go up is still subject to negotiation, but the governor's budget plan targets fees for items from fuel pump inspections to commercial feed licenses to pesticide applications. General revenue funds account for about 35% of the Agricultural Department's budget. I'm Todd Fuhrer.
The U.S. beef industry is trying to fight recession-related woes by promoting new, cheaper cuts from less popular parts of the steer and pushing beef harder overseas. Beef sales in the U.S. are suffering largely because consumers are not eating as much at restaurants. Historically, half of all meat sales in the U.S. go to the food service industry. At beef and poultry giant Tyson Foods, beef sales dropped about 7% in the fiscal first quarter ending December 27th. And ConAgra Foods says its third quarter profit fell 38%, but its sales rose and its adjusted results beat expectations. The owner of brands like Healthy Choice and Peter Pan said it earned $193.2 million, or 43 cents a share, for the 3 months ending February 22nd. That's down from $309.1 million, or 63 cents a share, a year ago. And that's today's agricultural news.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Apple trees get old and the orchards must be replaced. The problem up to this point has been that it wasn't really possible to put new trees where the old ones lived. Todd Gleason has more on research from the University of Illinois that could help orchard operators turn more profit on same land in less time.
Apple trees have always been, relatively speaking, small. In the 1930s and the 40s, that meant 25 to 30 feet, and today it's still the low-hanging fruit that gets picked first and most easily. The University of Illinois has been working on that height problem, and a couple of others apple growers face year in and year out when they choose new rootstocks to start trees, says University of Illinois researcher Mosbah Kushad.
As was practiced in the 30s and 40s, they used seedling rootstock, and the tree size is about, you know, somewhere about 25 to 30 feet, and they're just too big for many folks to go out there and pick the fruit, especially now we have a lot of U-pick operations, and they want smaller trees, so be accessible. The fruit will be accessible to the pickers and to the general public when they go to the farm. So quite a few breeding programs around the world that are breeding for smaller rootstocks, and we've been collecting these rootstocks and testing them in Illinois and in other sites, primarily to come up with a smaller tree that's still very productive and also produces fruits early.
Usually, a fruit tree produces its first crop in about 7 years. The trees at the University of Illinois produce in the second or third year.
Which makes it real attractive to growers that they can get new varieties, they can test the varieties, they can get into the market early and make their profit quicker than in the past.
So the trees in the U of I orchards are small and fast to produce, but that may not be their biggest advantage over the apple trees of old. Putting a new orchard in place of an old orchard doesn't work very well. The trees just don't grow. Well, with the exception of some of those in this research plot at Illinois.
The results are, look very encouraging. With some of these rootstocks, you can go in and plant. After you dig the apple trees, you can go plant in the same site another apple orchard without seeing any effect on the trees.
Many orchards are old and they need to be replaced. The new small, early fruiting and tolerant apple trees from the University of Illinois may be just the ticket to keep them right where they are today. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
We were saying off-air that you're making some purchases these days?
We were seeing some purchases on uptick days. We were buying some. I guess what surprised me is we picked up a few beans on the sell-off today. Whether it was give-up type selling or cash flow selling, I'm not sure. It wasn't huge numbers, but you know, a lot of times on a day like today, the phone just doesn't ring at all.
So I guess the question that is on everyone's mind is we have this quarterly grain stock report on Tuesday, and what will bases do thereafter?
I guess my bias for the report is it's going to come out here as for old crop as a reminder of how much corn is left out here and that we are shrinking demand nearby. The hogs and pigs report came out this afternoon, and farrowing intentions were a little below estimates on that. Bean-wise, I think we'll have a reminder out here of just how tight we are on bean supplies. So for the old crop, I think we get more of the same. New crop, I don't think we've ever seen a range this big on acreage estimates. So that will be the big question there.
Old crop corn basis has held up pretty good, especially on corn.
It's held up pretty decently, and we've seen, and in the last week, we've seen old crop corn basis improve by 3 cents. So that's good to see. Logistically, we've got a little bit of concern if these rain events come in next week. There's some concern that maybe we'll see the river have some high water problems again, so that could keep things tight there, too. You know, at some point, we'll probably get through this report and just start trading weather and planning progress.
So you think we're almost out of the woods in terms of the outside markets with the equities? Or?
I don't know, or if the market's just beat to death and tired of having equities whipsaw and trade back and forth a different direction every day. It needs something to grab onto to trade two or three days one direction in a row.
What's your opinion about the planning intentions? Do the traders have it right, or are we going to be surprised?
Somebody's going to have it right because there's such a huge range of guesses out there. I don't know. I'm, you know, what, 8-9 million acres of corn guesses between the high and low end there. I can't remember seeing such a wide range out there. Somebody's going to get it. We tend to overreact and, you know, end up with something really, really extreme on either direction and probably get something more middle of the road.
All right, let's go ahead and get your prices then today.
Basis-wise, we're at 371 on nearby, 382 on new crop, and on beans, 910 and 812, old and new respectively.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg, Regional Director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It's National Spanish Paella Day. The rice dish evidently originated in Spain in the mid-19th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1860, M.L. Byrne patented a new and improved corkscrew. Byrne claimed the design would provide greater strength and durability and that it could be manufactured at less cost than prior construction methods using a spiral twist of steel wire that gradually tapered from the handle to the point. In 1849, Joseph Couch received the first U.S. patent for a steam-powered percussion rock drill. In 1884, the first long-distance telephone call was made between Boston and New York City. Branch managers of the American Bell Telephone Company in Boston called their counterparts in New York City. Although they reported the call was perfectly clear, maintaining clarity on long-distance phone calls proved problematic until the early 1900s. In 1923, Sir James Dewar died. He invented the Dewar flask. The double-walled vacuum flask was commercialized in 1904 by a German company, which named the new product a thermos. And in 2001, China reported its population at 1.26 billion people. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Urbana, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon.
Well, as I was listening to our own weather department talk about things for the weekend, it doesn't sound like it's going to be all that pleasant.
No, it's not going to be. It's not going to be one of those warm, sunny weekends that get people hankering to go outside. It's going to be a button up and maybe throw a log on the fire type weekend. We have a storm system that's pretty well underway now in the southern plains. There's precipitation spreading from, and most of it's snow, from the Texas Panhandle all the way up through Kansas now. There's already precip starting to break out in western Missouri, and that will be arriving here. I think most of Illinois will probably be seeing some precipitation by sunrise tomorrow, but really will overspread the state in earnest during the morning tomorrow. And then as the system slowly pulls out tomorrow night, get some cold air in here, and there's probably going to be some snow, and it could be some heavy snow in parts of northwestern Illinois, further south, like in here in central Illinois. I would think we might see an inch if conditions are right, but a good thing about this time of year is that the next day usually temperatures warm up enough and a little brightening of the skies melts a lot of that away.
This storm is actually good news for the plains, which has been dry.
Yes, it's very good news for a lot of the hard runner wheat belt. A lot of some good precipitation falling in those areas. There's, of course, further south and eastern Texas and actually some parts of central Texas, they're not getting much out of this, but a pretty large area from eastern Kansas and Oklahoma down into western or eastern Texas, rather, is getting some precipitation. And the good thing is we're going to actually have a series of these systems moving here through the next week, and so there will be a couple more opportunities for precipitation there and here as we move through into the early part of April.
Question I've been asking all of our analysts this week, Steve, is that this spring thus far is trending wet just like it was a year ago at this time. Are you seeing anything on the horizon to suggest a ridge might develop and we might get to a little bit of a drier bias?
Not in the near future. And it looks like the wettest part of the region is going to be really the northwestern half of the Midwest. We're still a little dry in southern Illinois and on eastward. There's actually some dryness depicted on the drought monitor now in Ohio and Kentucky, although that might have been ameliorated somehow by the rain this week. So it's really the northwestern half of the growing region that's really under the gun, and it looks like it's going to stay wet for the next 2 weeks or so at least. I would not be happy to be up in North Dakota and western Minnesota right now.
About another 30 seconds, what else are you looking at?
Actually, just a really active weather pattern. We're hoping that we can get some of the precipitation to spread out a little bit more, get a little bit farther down into the hard, redder wheat belt and over the eastern sections of the Midwest, because despite the wet weather pattern in general, more or less from central Illinois on eastward, we really could use a little more precipitation.
Thanks, Steve.
All right.
Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, and that is today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for Commodity Week here on AM 580. That is at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. And you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.